Liebe Hörerinnen, liebe Hörer, in der heutigen Folge gehen wir mal einen Weg, den ich in den letzten 111 Folgen noch nie gegangen bin. Wir haben zwei englische Gesprächspartner und ich werde mich mit ihnen unterhalten. Der eine, dessen Namen ich nicht sagen werde und ihr werdet auch deswegen Piepe in dem englischen Gespräch hören, also verpiepste Tone, damit man nicht seinen Namen hört, nicht hört, für wen er gearbeitet hat. Er ist ein Kollege von mir aus Afghanistan und er hat es geschafft zu fliehen. Allerdings haben wir hier gerade als Büro in der letzten Woche ganz viel versucht, diesen Menschen zu helfen. Ich war also sehr erleichtert, als ich im Telefonat erfahren habe, beziehungsweise kurz davor, dass er bereits im Ausland ist. Und mit ihm spreche ich darüber, was es bedeutet, sein Land zu verlassen, alles zurückzulassen und plötzlich unter Todesgefahr zu sein, weil man als Journalist arbeitet und aus keinem anderen Grund. Und mein zweiter Gesprächspartner ist Juan Carlos. Dort wird es keine Piepse geben. Ihn kenne ich aus El Salvador und er hat mit mir für die erste Staffel von Uncovered meine wirklich ziemlich wichtige Reise durch dieses Land, ich habe schon oft im Podcast darüber gesprochen, der erste Tote, den ich gesehen habe, das alles habe ich mit Juan Carlos erlebt. Juan Carlos hat mich auch mal in Berlin besucht und bei mir gewohnt, also wir sind enger, als ich üblicherweise bin, mit Kollegen aus dem Ausland. Und er ist Kriegsfotograf und war auch schon in der Vergangenheit öfter in Kriegsgebieten und er hatte das große, Glück, in Kandahar zu sein, als die Taliban kamen, um diese Stadt einzunehmen. Und er hat auch das noch größere Glück gehabt, nicht erschossen worden zu sein, sondern die Erlaubnis bekommen zu haben, von den offiziellen Stellen der Taliban, diese Taliban zu begleiten. Und er befindet sich gerade in Kabul und mit ihm habe ich darüber gesprochen, wie dieses Foto, das die jetzige Ausgabe des Spiegels ziert, das Titelbild, entstanden ist und was es bedeutet, unter den Bedingungen, die gerade in Afghanistan herrschen, zu arbeiten. Noch wichtig ist zu wissen, dass diejenigen, die kein Englisch sprechen oder nur sehr schwer Englisch verstehen, was voll okay ist, weil ich war auch ziemlich kacke in Englisch und habe eigentlich nur Englisch gelernt durch Videospiele spielen und dann im Ausland sein. Für die kommt am Donnerstag eine übersetzte Folge in verteilten Rollen. Also Nils, der mir hier gerade gegenüber sitzt und diese Aufnahme kontrolliert, wird zum Beispiel die Person aus Afghanistan übersetzen und sprechen. Ich bleibe Thilo und Kasper, den ja auch einige Hörerinnen und Hörer aus diesem Podcast kennen, wird dann Juan Carlos sprechen. Also für diejenigen, die der englischen Sprache nicht mächtig sind, einfach noch zwei Tage warten, dann kommt eine übersetzte Version. Tja, ich weiß jetzt nicht, ob man hier viel Spaß wünschen kann, aber hört aufmerksam zu, es ist hochinteressant. Man erfährt Dinge, die man so noch nicht so richtig gehört hat, es sei denn, man guckt sehr genau in die Berichte des Auswärtigen Amts oder in die Analysen von Autorinnen und Autoren, die sich mit Afghanistan beschäftigen.
The guy with the gun just got in front of him and cocked the weapon and pointed at us, you know, like telling us if you move, you know, this is it.
The pictures you took in the past weeks, they made international news. How did you manage to be part of the, how do you call it, like the Taliban going forward? How did you manage to go with them and not to be killed or kidnapped or everything else?
Right. Well, I decided to cover when I arrived to Afghanistan, Kandahar, because the way the situation was looking, the Taliban advancing and taking over major cities, I figured Kandahar was going to be the next place where the Taliban was going to focus on, and having that history of being the birth of this movement and being the capital when the Taliban was in power. So when I arrived, it was, combat, just the outskirts of the city, frontline combat, but, you know, trying to cover the Afghan military side of it. To make a long story short, and we'll get into details about this later on, I imagine, the Taliban pretty much took over the city within, I like to say 48 hours, but it was actually maybe 24 hours. It was really, really quick. So after that, I ended up being stuck in Kandahar. So it was kind of a little bit worried about security because of you know, the behavior of the Taliban, the historical behavior of Taliban with press. But it was actually surprising. I let the spokesperson for the Taliban that I was there as a foreign journalist, and sure enough, they assured me that the other colleague, Fiction, and I were safe, and then as long as we don't go out, we shouldn't worry about anything, and you know that eventually we'll figure something out. So throughout this time, I'm trying to get out to photograph, because you know it's important to cover that major event. And finally, we were, you know, throughout this, it was kind of hard to go out without any sort of permission from the Taliban in order for you to be on the street to shoot. And we constantly were trying to get that access, but it was denied until we were told that we could go to the airport and be evacuated, or take the flight out of Kandahar, because I was stuck there for about 4 days. During that trip towards the airport, I was told that there were no flights, so I ended up kind of being stuck in the middle of a thousand or more Taliban in the airport, and I was able to, through the fixer, negotiate if we could, you know, photograph and show the world, you know, the situation in Kandahar, which surprisingly enough, they were pretty much open about it, and they allowed me to pretty much do my work, which is it was something very surprising and also pleasant at the same time as a journalist, because I was getting that aspect of this conflict that was not being shown or would not be able to get access to show. So this is how I managed to be able to do it without putting myself in danger.
But did they?
Even though I had tried before to get access to the other side, right, with the Taliban during the fighting, but it was becoming very difficult.
Did they threaten you during it? Like, because one, like the simple Taliban soldier does not know that you have the allowance to take pictures if he sees you taking pictures, because the famous title you did for Spiegel and the French news outlet and El Pais and several magazines is a very close-up picture of a Taliban fighter. So did he know that you are allowed to photograph him?
You know, that's the thing. Like I said, it was very surprising in the way I think it's a new Taliban, a new aspect or a new approach or a new way of dealing with media from the Taliban. You encounter certain people that do not like or question you why you're doing that. Once you settle that, you know, you've been given permission to do it, it seems okay with it. Some of the Taliban fighters do not allow you to, but in this case, I was not questioned, because if you're there and if you're shooting, I imagine they automatically assume that you've been given permission, of course, otherwise you wouldn't be standing or doing this kind of photographs without any access. So I must say I did not encounter much of a resistance or hostility from the fighters, so which kind of gave me a good position to kind of focus on making the images and showing that side of the conflict.
How did you experience the siege, the conflict of Kandahar? Was it fast and controlled, or was it chaotic and just a coincidence that it worked out so well for the Taliban?
Well, I don't know if it's a coincidence. It was very, very. It happened very fast. I arrived there on a Monday night, and you know, right after I landed, headed to a front line to try to see what the situation was. And there was fighting at the front lines. We're talking about the mountains that surround the city. Which is kind of like a natural wall that Kandahar has. So there was fighting going on, but not constant fighting. You know, it was attacks here and there, happening mostly at night. So it was, in a way, things were being controlled. The army was able to kind of hold the Taliban. You know, they would advance a bit, but they would push back. They were able to control and defend Kandahar. Next day, you know, you hear a lot more fighting at night and during the day periods. You know, it wasn't constant fighting, but it was pretty much being handled very well by the Afghan military and police. Next day, I visited another front line, and it was pretty much the same situation. They would get attacked here and there. They would defend themselves on that. One thing that this second front line that I went to, then the following day on a Tuesday, they did complain. The Afghan soldiers at the post that they had, they complained that they've noticed that some of the Taliban fighters had a night vision, which was very interesting for them to say. I was not able to see it myself, but you know, they talked this about this a lot. So they felt that they had this disadvantage of equipment, right? Because it was interesting because that front line, that post, was only being defended by 240 elements, half Afghan military and half police, which is a very small amount of personnel to protect such a big front line. So that day, you know, things went, like I said, there was fighting here and there, but not much, nothing in the city. It was all being in the outskirts. That night, around almost, you could say almost midnight, I started to hear, you know, heavier fighting, you know, explosions here and there constantly. And which it was, you know, past 2 days I've heard that. You know, it would happen for a while and then it would stop. And then a couple hours more, and a couple hours later, it would start again. But on Tuesday night, it was very interesting that, you know, it continued. It continued to be like heavier fighting, you know, throughout the night. And it just went on, literally, almost nonstop. I mean, it was nonstop firefights, explosions, all night. So for me, it kind of gave me an idea that something big was happening, you know, that there was a big offensive, or finally the Taliban was pushing into the city because of these, you know, constant fighting that went on until the morning. Got up really early in the morning and got in contact with the fixer and picked us up. He came over, picked me up, and you know, I decided to follow the smoke, follow the noise, because you know, as you got out to the, you know, as you got out of the place where I was staying, you could see smoke coming from the horizon, and once again, you still would hear the firefights, the explosions. On the way to that area, we stopped by a cemetery and found a sad situation, a sad event. There was Noor, a young man that was kind of with friends and family, were digging the graves for his parents who had been killed days before, the night before, in, you know, during that clashes between the Taliban and the Afghan army. And you know, it was, he lost his, both of his parents. And, you know, as he was digging, or they were digging, you know, the graves, you could hear the constant, you know, explosions, the firefights. Once in a while, you hear a helicopter from the Afghan military, you know, doing bombing certain Taliban points here and there. After that, I headed to, you know, where the noise was, and it happened to be really close to the city now. You know, the fighting that I would hear, I had heard 2 days before, it was happening in the, pretty much in the outskirts, right, in the surrounding area of the city. But now it was in the city. It was literally, you could say, about 5 to 10 minutes away from the city center. So now you were getting the feeling the Taliban were really close, not quite in the city, but close enough. So got to this neighborhood, which was the District 15 in the south of Kandahar. And sure enough, there was a lot of commotion. There was a lot of people kind of standing outside, people fleeing the area. Was able to get close to the front line. Soldiers brought me in and even closer, and I was able to witness some of the fighting that was going on to, you know, protect or prevent the town from coming closer into the city. So that all the firefights and explosions that I had heard were coming, most of them were coming from that area. I was told by a Afghan an Afghan soldier that all night the Taliban had actually pushed into the city. They took over that area, the District 15. But early in the morning, they were able to push them back, and they were happy about that they had pushed them back and, you know, prevented the Taliban from really capturing that neighborhood. It was really close to the city center.
Did you hear? Did you hear like words on the street from civilians? Now they are coming back, and everything will be the same as 20 years ago, or were the people way more scared than 20 years ago? Because in the European news, you have the feeling that everyone in Afghanistan was surprised, but I think the reality, is like everyone was expecting it, except for the speed of the Taliban.
Yeah, you know, I mean, at least in Kabul, nobody expected this or to happen. In Kandahar, they had a different feeling because they knew that even though they were, like I said, they were in the outskirts of the city, but they knew they were close enough. So Kandahar had a different feeling about it. I think they were hoping that it wouldn't happen. They were hoping, but deep in their hearts, or they knew deeply in themselves that, you know, it was the Taliban was going to come in. You know, the daily life, you know, it was business as usual. Monday, Tuesday, it was business as usual. You know, people doing their thing. You would just hear the explosions, firefighters here and there. You know, that you hear some firing here and there. But on Wednesday, you know, then people, after that night of heavy fighting and explosions all night and throughout the day, the vibe in Kandahar changed. A lot of businesses closed. You know, there weren't as many people outside. You could start. You would start getting that feeling of they're getting closer. Now, there were those that, like I said, they were hopeful, or they had this idea that it wouldn't happen that fast. And there were those that kind of felt that the Taliban's coming, and we just gotta wait and see what happens. So there were some people worried about what was going to happen when the Taliban would come in, you know, and I think about what would happen, especially women, you know, and those who had worked with foreign entities, foreign military, with the military, with the foreign forces that were in the country for 20 years. But also a lot of the people of the working class or in villages or in rural areas were actually fine with the Taliban coming in, because they had experienced corruption during those 20 years of American and, you know, democracy, quote unquote, in Afghanistan. There were a lot of people that had to deal with the corruption from the police and other government officials, and they felt that the Taliban taking over was a good thing, and they did not have to deal with this anymore, and they could live in peace. And these are people that, you know, they can make very little doing their farming, whatever job they do, whatever thing that they do in order to survive. And they were tired of having to deal with this corruption. So it was a mixed feeling. I believe that it depends where you're coming from. If you are a more progressive, you know, middle class, working middle class Afghan, or you got a lot more to lose because, you know, you want a better education, you want a better life for your children, especially if you have women in your family, you want them to get an education, be part of society. They're going to be affected by this kind of taking over of the Taliban, Afghanistan. But the working class, you know, the masses that are, you know, the vendors, the people that farm, for them, whether there's a Taliban government or a, you know, quote unquote, democratic American-backed government, it doesn't matter to them, because they, you know, it doesn't affect them in any way. You know, they still got to work. It's not going to change their status or their way of living. They're still going to continue to do what they have done for years, except that someone won't deal with the corruption. So there's some welcoming of the Taliban in certain areas, but it's also due because of the corruption that happened 20 years in this, U.S.-backed government.
Yeah, I was talking to a journalist for this podcast, and he told me, what the war brought to Afghanistan is corruption. That's the what an Afghan person takes out of 20 years of forces in our country. Now we have corruption. That was his conclusion after he fled. And I find this very interesting that people don't like. We have problems to understand why there was this war now, because it made no sense. And also the people of Afghanistan, they often don't see the positive effect. If you ask me, I couldn't tell you the positive effect of this war for Afghanistan as well. But it's interesting to see that everyone is so speechless right now, and they don't know what to think. And maybe it's better with the Taliban or not. We don't know yet. Because the Taliban now is like seeming to be more progressive in a Taliban sense. Do you have the same feeling if you look in the streets, look how they behave? I was reading stories about they are beheading again, they are hangings, they whip people with a whip. I don't know. Is it an English word? Yeah.
Yes.
What could you could you experience such like this cruel behavior of the Taliban?
What the journalist said about corruption, I think is pretty accurate. I think it is a big factor. What he said and is correct, right? The Taliban, the Afghan people or the Afghans in general, they didn't benefit that much from those 20 years of American-backed government or that international intervention that you would think of. You would think that 20 years is a pretty good period of time to see a difference, to see changes. Now, there were some changes, especially in with women that were able to kind of be more inclusive in society and all that. Those changes, yeah, they're there. But in general, infrastructure and other things, it's lacking. He's right. I mean, the ones that really benefited from this war were the private contractors coming in and, doing whatever they ended up doing here and charging millions of dollars for something that otherwise right now you don't see, right? And I'll give you an example. In this whole situation that I was stuck in Kandahar, I was expecting to be able to take a charter flight or leaving some sort of a humanitarian flight, somehow get out of Kandahar in order to come to Kabul. Well, that thing wasn't happening, so ended up taking the decision to drive from Kandahar to Kabul, even though I was being advised not to do it.
Yeah.
But, it was either that or I would still be stuck in Kandahar. Anyways, so ended up doing that trip. It was very interesting. It wasn't as bad as I expected. We encountered a few checkpoints. But once again, what you said, it's a kind of modern or, Taliban or a different Taliban than what it was 20 years ago. But having said that, went to the checkpoints with journalists, they would just, go through without any issues. If we had any issues, we had a letter from the Taliban spokesperson saying that we're guests of the Taliban, that we're journalists and we should be allowed to do our work. But the reason I'm telling the story is that going back to who benefited and how the Afghans have not really seen the results of 20 years investment in the country, seen it in a big way, right? Is that the road from Kandahar to Kabul is one of the worst roads I've ever ridden on. I mean, that road is destroyed. It's a mess. It's incredible how vehicles can, use that road to travel. It's really bad. So while I was on that trip, while I was thinking about what had happened in Kandahar, what's happening in Afghanistan, the whole situation, it dawned on me that I can't believe that after 20 years and billions of dollars, they couldn't build a good road to connect Kandahar, the second largest and most important city in Afghanistan, with Kabul.
Yeah.
people could argue security reasons, you know, but still, like, these are the kind of things that would benefit a country. Now, it's not all that would make a difference in Afghanistan, but, you know, roads infrastructure is part of helping a country kind of the development, right? You connect people because they have to travel or goods, whatever the reason. So roads are, you know, important nowadays in general. And this was, that road looked like it was from the 70s. I mean, I think in the 70s they had better roads than now. I'm sorry. Yeah. That in comparison is not even good, right? But it's just to give you an example of the whole corruption and how Afghans have not really felt or have not really seen that big change, that development of the country after 20 years of investment
from
the U.S. and foreign.
Would you say that the advantage of having a United States government backed up by the United States, that most of the people, they didn't see the advantage of that because there were no roads built, there were no schools built. And could this be the reason why it went so fast? Because the people were just exhausted by living under control of the United States, but not getting any positive effect of it.
No, I don't think that they were exhausted. You know, they were about the situation. I think the Afghan people are disappointed and in a way mad and wish they would have seen a better results from these 20 years. So, but still, that wasn't enough for them to really say, "Oh, the Taliban it would be a better government." That wasn't the feeling at all. Like I said, that feeling was mostly in villages where corruption was happening, or in other small areas. But in the general sense, they definitely did not want a Taliban government or the Taliban to cover the country. But they did feel, or they have felt that they haven't seen the progress that was promised, or the progress that should have been accomplished after 20 years, after so much money being invested. You know, in general, you don't see 20 years investment. You don't see billions of dollars invested in the country. So that's kind of, I think, the feeling of people in general. The other thing that many expressed, especially during the fighting, is that they were angry and sad at the same time about the U.S. withdrawal of Afghanistan. They couldn't believe, and for them it was they were confused, and they couldn't believe why the United States had just abandoned them, you know, overnight. Like, why they just left, you know, like they just left them behind instead of staying here and helping them fight, instead of staying here and helping them, you know, avoid what we have now, a Islamic Emirates state, right? So that was the feeling you would get. And yes, they were, or they are, disappointed, or they are, in a way, feeling that they didn't get much from these 20 years of U.S.-backed government investment, but they definitely did not want a Taliban government to take over. And you're right, the Taliban is showing a little bit of being modern. Like in the first press conference, they talked about they want women to be inclusive, you know, they want freedom of press and these things. But right now, people in general, at least in Kabul as well, I mean, in Kabul, I've got this feeling of people being that uncertainty, right? They don't know what's going on. I mean, you know, the Taliban present themselves as this modern, more progressive, or at least, you know, more modern way of thinking, but is that really them? You know, they don't know that, because what they have seen or their experience with the Taliban, it has been, you know, what the Taliban was 20 before they were taken out of power 20 years ago. So it's hard to kind of believe someone that, you know, it's been evil, it's been bad, and dreaming throughout the war, you know, they continue to assassinate and kill people, and now they're saying, you know, oh, we're not as bad as you think, you know, we can be good, and we're gonna allow this to happen, we're not gonna get the country to step back when we wanted to move forward. Regarding, you know, beheadings and these kind of events where people being killed, I haven't personally experienced or seen anything like that, but I have heard from other Afghans and colleagues that in certain areas, some people have been in this situation where, you know, their family members have been killed because they work for the U.S. government or the foreign armed forces here, or UN, or some sort of international organization. Others because they're journalists. Others because they're activists. So you have these cases that you hear people talk about. But I haven't witnessed any of them yet.
What about your fixer working together with you? Isn't he in danger now when you leave the country, but he has to stay?
Yes. Well, he was already in the process of getting a visa because he had worked for the ISAF. And so he's in that process, but still it's not there yet. So he actually had to come to Kabul and stay here because he felt in Kandahar was not safe. Now, my issue has been as a freelance, when I got to Kabul, I haven't had a fixer because the fixer that I was supposed to work with, he didn't want to, and he was too busy trying to get out and getting other of his friends out. So he never got back to me, and I didn't want to push him to work with me. So I've been actually covering Kabul without a fixer. Actually, I have a taxi driver that I was connected with, and he lived in Germany for years, so he speaks good German but not English. He speaks enough English for me to get along. So he's been a great person to work with. He's been kind of my translator sometimes, but many times he stays in the car and I just walk on my own and try to get things done. You know, it's been difficult, but yeah. So actually, that's been one of my obstacles here. I don't have a fixer because many of them are trying to flee, or many of them are afraid of working with a foreign journalist. So I'm lucky enough that the Latifi tax rabbit is doing it. He's done it before with other German media, as he tells me. But yeah, he's in danger. So I'm trying to figure out and find a way through organizations and other colleagues that I know of to see if he can apply for a visa or try to take him out as a refugee from here after working with me. So I'm giving him some information, and I could provide him with the type of letters, whatever support that I can provide him with. So yeah, that's in the works, because I know eventually things will get tougher, right?
What do you think about, like, how long do you have to stay in Kabul? Because getting out of Kabul is quite difficult right now.
Yes, it is. And it's a sad situation what people have to go through to get out of Kabul. It's heartbreaking. When I'm there, I get angry, I get sad. It's heartbreaking seeing what people have to go through. But you're right, I'm here to report. I feel that it's important to be here to try to show as many stories as possible, to show the world, to the people that, this was a big mistake. This was, once again, the world is abandoning Afghanistan and leaving them in a bad situation when they shouldn't be dealing with this. So I'm planning to stay here as much as I can until I can no longer stay here, or when I decide that it's time to go, whichever comes first. So I'm going to push the limits, see how far I can be here and do as much reporting as I can and witness what's happening. Because one of the reasons that I decided to come here is that I analyzing and thinking about what was happening in Afghanistan, the withdrawal of the U.S., which, they call it withdrawal, but actually they pretty much abandoned, it's like they just left. And it's been a lot of comparisons. It's like the Saigon, in the Vietnam War. So I felt that covering the Afghanistan situation right now, it is it's the Vietnam of our era. It's like Vietnam 2.0, you see a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You also have the same pictures. Like you see the helicopters hovering over the embassies, yeah, rescuing people. It's like the similar pictures than to, if you compare to Saigon.
Yeah, you know, people rushing into the airport trying to get into flight and all this stuff. And, you know, I have a picture in the front page of El País a couple of days ago where there's this commotion and all that. So, yeah, you're right. It's just, that's what I'm saying is, it's 2.0. It's the same scene, except that now we have better technology, which doesn't really help much because you still can't handle evacuating people. You know, they didn't do a good job of handling the situation. Now, it's not easy. It's not organized, of course. It's never going to be that easy, that organized. But you could get a good plan, a good way to do it, except that they never did. So that's why you have this mess. You know, you have people that have been injured. You know, and like I said, I haven't witnessed, but I've been told that there's people that have been killed trying to get out. Well, you have the people that jumped to the plane the other day that fell from the sky. You know, these kind of sad situations.
Mm. Did you go to the airport yesterday?
Yes, I was at the airport yesterday.
Did you see the shootings and that there are like fightings between American forces, German forces, and Taliban forces?
I on the side that I was, I did not, because I was in at the airport on the side of the where the Americans are. I did not see that. What I do see constantly when I'm going to the area is, you know, either Afghan Taliban or Afghan soldiers that are helping the Americans, you know, control and deal with the whole situation, shooting up in the air, light ammunition to kind of get people to move back and all that stuff. But I haven't witnessed, like, you know, this sad events that I've been told that are happening. I wasn't there when this happened. But I know there's this kind of situation. The first time, the other day, I was told that other people also have lost their life because they actually shot directly at the crowd, Taliban.
So,
I did not witness myself.
We are thinking about going to Afghanistan end of November, maybe in December, if it's possible, if the situation allows us. Would you join us?
Definitely.
That's good.
It'd be interesting to see what Afghanistan is going to be that time. You know, once again, the press conference, what the Taliban is saying is that, you know, we're open, especially in the issue of women, right?
Yeah.
Being part of society. You know, basically what's saying with different Taliban, you know, we want to work with foreign, you know, the other foreign countries. We want to be recognized by everyone, you know, as a legit, you know, good government, and we're willing to do these things. This, you know, we're not the Taliban we used to be.
Do you believe
so
them?
It would be interesting to see it, because, you know, that could be a case, that could not be a case. It could be just the case where they're just saying that's in order to kind of get things in order and then go back to old ways. But giving them the benefit of the doubt, you know, they seem willingly to change and be more progressive.
Yeah.
But I believe that's a big issue. There's going to be a problem either sooner or later. There's going to be a problem because you're going to have the, you know, when we're going to use this word, you know, the demonstrative, or, you know, the administrative of the government part of the Taliban, right? Mm-hmm. The officials that are part of the government, that they want to be open for women to go to school, to work, you know, kind of change their extremist conservative ways of seeing you know, women and open to other things, right? But you're going to have the general Taliban that is still conservative, and they actually fought to go back to the ways to continue that very conservative extremist Taliban way of ruling, way of thinking. And these people are going to clash with the new modern Taliban. So I believe that eventually there's going to be a fractured Taliban. You're going to have the modern Taliban and the conservative Taliban. And that's going to kind of, sadly enough, I hope it doesn't happen, because, you know, Afghanistan has suffered so much for decades now, like it's nonstop. But I feel that that's going to happen eventually. You know, you're going to have that fracture because a lot of the fighters out there, you know, They don't want a modern Taliban. They want what they were promised.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Do you see a civil war coming up, like in Syria?
There's some insurgency. So there's some fighting up in the north in some villages that have we know of you know, they're fighting the Taliban and trying to put them out and trying to, you know, hold the Taliban from taking or taking over their city. I've yet to see that elsewhere, either in Kandahar or here in Kabul. I doubt that it would be that kind of situation, but it could happen. It could happen eventually. People could rise up. I yet to see signs of that, and, you know, that could, you know, could know that that's going to happen. I feel that there's going to be more of a, like I told you before, there's going to be more of a fracture Taliban, and that's going to create another war or another conflict, right? So maybe there's going to be an insurgency, or maybe there's going to be a rising of the people that don't want, you know, don't want a Taliban government. But I feel that it's most likely it's going to be, if a conflict is gonna, you know, it's gonna happen in Afghanistan in the future, it's gonna be a conflict between the conservative Taliban and the modern Taliban.
So, and there was never a situation in Afghanistan which was like dangerous, because this job sounds very dangerous, what you experienced, like being in Kandahar, trying to go the road. Like, never happened anything to you and everything was fine?
Well, you know, there's always a danger of covering these conflicts, right? There's always that there. But there was an incident, actually, not in Kandahar, but in Kabul. Second day, and the next day after I arrived to Kabul, I decided to go see what the situation was, you know, what's the story of Kabul. And the entrance of the airport was a very interesting scene. You had hundreds and hundreds of Afghans trying to get into the airport, and it was a cat and mouse thing. You know, the people were trying to rush in or get into the gate or at least into the line, and then Taliban, you know, protecting that area, were killing them. You know, shooting live ammunition to the air, trying to push them back, and it was this constant thing. But it was an interesting thing, right, to see the desperation of people that. Sometimes they didn't even have passports. They just want to get into the airport to see if they could get out. So while photographing this, since it was my first day, I was trying to get a feeling, and I got off, you know, took some, made some images. It was fine, you know. Then after a while, a Taliban came over and said, look, you know, that's enough, you know, you should go, and et cetera, et cetera. So I went ahead, started walking back to the car. Ended up, you know, doing a few more shots, and then, you know, he came back again and said, like, you know, you gotta go, right? But this was pretty much pretty calm, very, very polite kind of thing. I got in the car, you know, and then I ended up going around trying to see if I could, you know, get a different angle or get another in another area. Went around again to the front of the gate. While I was doing that, I was almost getting ready to prepare the camera to see if I could park and do some shooting. And then as we were turning, one of the Taliban saw that I had a camera, and right away, since we were slowly turning left, you know, came into the car and grabbed my camera and started shouting at me. I don't know what he was saying, but I imagine he was asking me what I was doing, and he wanted to take my camera away. So I fought with him, you know. I was like, no, you're not gonna take my camera away. And he's like, kept on doing it. And another one came and told us to park, and a couple of the Taliban came through the window because I was sitting in the back of the car and started hitting me. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was fighting with the guy, and the other guys were hitting me. You know, they hit the driver. We ended up having to park. You know, we parked, and then another guy with a gun came, you know, started pointing at us. And at this point, the taxi driver was trying to tell him that I'm a journalist. You know, I have permission to be here. That I have a letter. That, you know, that it should be fine. And they wouldn't let him explain. You know, they just wanted us to get out of the car. And you know, they opened the door. They tried to pull me out. I closed it. He closed the other door. He tried to kind of start advancing. And as he started to, you know, kind of made that motion of trying to move the car, the guy with the gun just got in front of him, cocked the weapon and pointed at us. Oof. You know, like telling us, if you move, you know, this is it. So we stopped, and then there was this commotion. I was still fighting with the guy. Some other Taliban fighters came over, and, you know, one of them spoke some English, so I told him what the situation was, and he kind of calmed it down, you know. And I showed him the letter. I showed him that I'm a press pass, and then he read it, and he said, okay, no, sorry, we know this is fine. It's not going on. But while he was saying all this, the other guy that originally had stopped me and wanted to take my camera away, he insisted on wanting to take me in. He didn't want to let go of the camera. He wanted to take the camera and take me in. And he kept on telling them, you know, these two guys, look, you know, he's fine. He's got permission. And they insisted that no, that they had to take us in. You know, he insisted that he had to take my camera away. And I don't know. He wanted to take us in and make us his prisoners. He wouldn't let go. Eventually, the guy with the gun got into the back of the taxi with me. The guy that was fighting with, you know, trying to take my camera away, got into the passenger side, and he told us to drive. And we're like, hey, dude, we're fine. He's like, no, drive. So eventually, they told the driver to go to the post where a higher official was there, and we went. And there, they insisted that they should be taking us, you know. They insisted that we weren't supposed to be doing what we were, you know, I wasn't supposed to be there. They insisted, they actually wanted to do something to us. Until the commander, you know, another guy read my letter, said I was pregnant, it was fine. They still wouldn't get off the car. They still wanted to take us in. Until finally, the higher commander came over and said, look, they're fine, no problem. And that, so it was very difficult for them to accept that they were going to let in us go. So actually, that letter saved my life, because if I wouldn't have that letter, you know, they would have taken me in, and I don't know what would happen to the taxi driver and I. So it's a very close call in this kind of situation, that you find some talents that are very, and this goes back to the analysis that I was telling you about, the modern Taliban and the more conservative. You know, you had these Taliban that came over and read the letter and said, you're fine, or you press, go do your work. And you had these two Taliban that originally stopped us, and their whole goal was to take us in.
Hmm.
They're like, no, they're not, you know, they're angry, you know, against America, against everything. So you have this difference of approach. And I continue to encounter that kind of situation when I go out and shoot. You know, sometimes I find a very open, as long as I have the right documentation, the letter, they allow me to do my work. Others, they completely shut you down. They completely push you and say, no, you can't do it. So this is the kind of thing. Based on this incidents, events, I feel that that's going to be a fracture. Taliban, because you have the modern and more conservative, right? So yeah, this event, it was very close call. It was a very nervous situation. You know, the taxi driver I don't want to call him taxi driving so much, but we kind of laughed about it afterwards, you know, kind of to cope with the situation. But it was very, very intense. And you know, it could have ended up taking a left turn and we would have been taken in. And I don't know what would have happened to us. So
yeah,
these are the kind of things you end up dealing with as a journalist.
Juan Carlos, thank you very much. If you ever need a bed again in Berlin when you're going back home, you are welcome to stay as long as you want.
I'll be happy to. Actually, that's one of the cities that I want to move to. So
yeah, not forever, but until you find a flat where you can live, you are welcome to stay at my place.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, das waren die Erzählungen von Juan Carlos, die auch für mich als Journalist hochinteressant waren, denn mit welcher doch Abgebrühtheit und Erfahrung er über diesen Krieg spricht und eben auch etwas erzählt, was auch ich in Kriegsgebieten schon erlebt habe, nämlich dieses, du musst zu einer Frontlinie fahren und die Normalität findet dahinter weiter statt. Davon hat er ganz gut berichtet, finde ich. Mein nächster Gesprächspartner ist, ich wiederhole das jetzt nochmal, namenlos und er hat im Gespräch einige Male seinen Namen gesagt. Ich habe seinen Namen gesagt und auch den Ort, für den er oder die Firma, für die er arbeitet, die haben wir aus Sicherheitsgründen und auch nach seiner Bitte verfremdet mit einem Piep, also kriegt bitte keinen Schreck, wenn es zwischendurch piept. Das ist einfach nur, um das Leben dieser Person zu schützen. Und warum es auch aktiv beschützt werden muss, hört ihr in dem Gespräch, was jetzt folgt.
Can you hear me, Tilly?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, go ahead, please. So.
Okay, very good. So the first question is, I learned a very impressive quote from you when I was in Kabul together with you. I don't know if you remember. You told me the quote like, the wood from an axe is made from the same, from the tree the axe chops down. Can you remember this?
Yeah.
Is this what happens right now in Afghanistan?
I think so, mostly and worse than that.
What does it mean? Like, why is it worse?
So what has happened actually, so U.S. planning, first, whenever it happened, no one was accepting that that happened this much quickly in Afghanistan. So, and we were seeing the problems going fall down to the Taliban, and we were accepting that that's, you know, because they were, most provinces have open areas, that's what the fight's not happening, and it's about Taliban's going between the houses, then coming on the streets or the village areas, taking over the from the government. But in Kabul, we was know that Kabul is the kindly full of like a more than 6 million people staying on it. It's all full, and it was not easy to the Taliban to get places between the civilians or the normal people houses. That was, we are thinking that at least we have 2 months, that's not going to happen. Actually, when after Herat and few big cities like Herat, Kandahar, and other cities that fall down under the Taliban hand, then we are kindly feeling not good. So then kindly propaganda has been spread on the Friday between the Kabul city that the Taliban's coming in the city, and the people role and ANAs has been moved to start moving from out of the city into the capital and parking the armored vehicles. I mean, heavy vehicles like our own base and tanks around of the brigades and deer and going escape, changing ANA clothes, the normal clothes like a shalwar kameez or penantamon, we call it in Dari. And you're seeing a kindly people was thinking, oh, the Taliban's are in, but the Taliban was not in on the time. And after that, this news has been spread between the government people. So on the day, like, as you know, I'm working with the media, the most media channel was leaving on the day, like CBS were in Afghanistan, BBC were in Afghanistan, CNN were in Afghanistan, New York Times were in Afghanistan. So the most clients was leaving, and I went to the airport to cover my team as a normal, I was doing job. And I was seeing that everyone is panicking, like ministers, all these commanders, like all these top people that was working on the government were in the airport. I was seeing that something was going wrong. In the meantime, has been heard from a security alert that I should also be leave as soon as possible that I can do. And I keep myself at the airport to leave. I can go back to the what happened at the airport. Then we were, everything was normal. Everything was normal. I have many friends at the airport, and I have been asking my friends to buy me a ticket for my brother. And they said, okay, there's tickets over the load, and the people is a lot. There's like three planes has been scheduled to Turkey, Istanbul. All these people which was working for the government, like a parliament members, ministers, were on it. So what happened, actually, these were three flights. One flight was at the 5 p.m., and the other flight was at the 8 p.m., and the last flight was at 3 a.m. of the next day. So the people were on the two other flights. They was being tried to jump up on the first flight, which is going to happen on the 5 o'clock. I kindly just think that the plane was for 300 people. It was overload, like more than 700 people. That's what I heard, and I have a witness on it, and I have videos of it from the staff of the Kamiel, which was over 700 people on it. So they has been told them, please get out of the plane. And no one was attention. The people were into the plane with the guns, because these MPs and parliament members or minister have access to the VIP, so they can drive into the VIP with the guns as a normal of it before. But they done the same thing on the day which make the situation worse. So the
people working in the parliament, they put their guns out and threatened their own people. Leave the plane. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they went to the plane. So yeah, and after that, the airline was requesting them to leave the plane, please. We only can take only 300 people, which is standard of the plane and airlines. But no one has been attention. What the commander has been decided to leave there on the time. From the meantime, there is another have responsibility of inside the terminals by the name of, and the leader has been beaten by one of the warlords. So then the warlord has been beating him and without any reasons. And then that guy has been decided to leave. He has been announced to all his staff, leave the airport without search. So this means they left, no one was searching. And after that, that's when the things gone crazy. And tomorrow of that day, when the Taliban see the situation is gone, you know, in a different way, what I heard from the Taliban, Nazibi Mujahid, the spokesperson of the Taliban, he said that then President Karzai, asked them to come into the city because the government's already left and the people are criminals or in the city making bad names to the Taliban, stealing the people, and all the thieves were in.
Yeah. When was the moment you realized I have to leave my country? When did you say I have to leave it?
I was the one that I was never taught to leave my country at all. I was in really bad situations in the past too. Like I was under threat of the MPs. I was under the level of Taliban. I was under the threat of different people. But I never decided to leave my country. I was hired to work in Afghanistan in a state land of my life because I had many chances. I have been to the Europe countries and I was been worked for the U.S. government since 2006 to 2009. I was able to apply on the SIB project too. But I never decided to leave Afghanistan. By the Friday when I heard they were coming in and everyone forced me, especially my mom and my family, to leave. I was not curious what was going on. But when I see the panic of the people, I decide to leave by Sunday. And when you get the airport, this is the things that doesn't happen. We couldn't reach the plane. We has been wait like 2 days at the airport, and there was a big crowd because of not letting the people the plane land on the runway, and there was no chance to get. So we has been used different skills, still we couldn't reach it till today that we got in.
So I realized a second ago, or like 20 minutes ago, that you were able to leave to, is this right? You are in
we got in this morning.
Yeah, that's a very good news for me to know, because thanks. I was really scared about you and your family. So
thanks.
That's
thanks
very good.
But I got in with my wife and my kids, but still I'm facing with my family. This is a big problem to me. They're under the threat, so I need to take them out too. That's why I'm looking for solutions of different ways to take them out too.
Yeah. How did you manage to leave the country?
Oh, actually, as you know, I was been working for as a local producer or as a local fixer. What happened has been helping to get out of the country.
Okay. And a lot of people in Germany, they are like on Twitter, they are saying, if this would be my country, I would grab guns and fight against those people. How unrealistic is it to think that you can fight an army as a as a civilian? Can you give me an explanation why the people in Afghanistan surrendered so quickly to the Taliban?
To be honest, it's a big game. It's really, difficult for the civilian, especially for the normal people understanding what's the game and who are the players. So it's not like a small game. So you are thinking it's really big. And that's why whenever anyone has been being gone to talk really higher, understanding the situation, who are the good players, they has been lost lives or they are on a bad mode, they're in the jail, or that's what's happening. So we can call it a big game. And again, that I'm thinking, and most people that like me, we have been discussing, thinking it was an agreement. I know it was an agreement, and you were understanding this agreement, but you was not understanding this agreement is going this much, it's gone crazy to even the capitalist world fall down to the Taliban. But it was an agreement. Even we was hoping, wishing that President Ghani stay in Afghanistan till the end of the time, at least defends the Kabul or come on an agreement, because he done nothing and at the hand he was escaping, or if he wants to sign the agreement or resigning, he should do it like a long time ago, because a lot of people or rank generation lost lives.
Would you have taken a gun, an AK-47, and fight for your street? Would you have done that?
I will done it. If our government has been stunned, but right now I can't make any changes because I've been fired for my country on the right way as a journalist in Afghanistan for the past 12 years. I has been done a lot to my country to make aware of the people what's going on, what's good to the country, what's bad to the country. Has been made a lot of information about my country, has been fight against to the corruption in Afghanistan. I has been open mind of the people what's going on, has been given information about the mine of Afghanistan, how many mines do we have, how many expensive mountains do we have, but that doesn't work. So this means you cannot clap in one hand. So you must have a unit to work on it. which is not. But I'm ready if if someone's go announce from Afghanistan that we are ready to fight against. Because right now we are understanding we are not fighting Afghans to Afghans. They are getting support from outside. I mean, if you go and make it categories, so we can call it our neighbors, Pakistan and Iran. If you make it a little bit high, we can understanding who are on the high positions making these games.
Can you go back, or do you have to stay in? Or in
I like to go back, and that's my one of my wishes to go back, because I left my life there, you know. I left my everything, all my wishes, my kids' wishes, everything is there. So, but I have seen the situation of the Taliban and treating the people. I kind of lost my all wishes. Before that, whenever anyone was mentioning me to leave Afghanistan, it was make me on a bad mood, and it was nearly, I was crying, wow, I should leave the country that I work for it. Wow, I should leave my country that has been done everything, and I was wishing to stay there longer. But right now I'm not understanding, because I have to take care of my own safety and my family's safety, which is one priority to me.
If you, you can open the door if you want.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's okay. If they done for the second time, we'll open. No problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. If you like, for my listeners, if you leave a country, what is it? What you are taking with you? What do you take? What are the belongings you are taking with you?
Sorry, say again. I didn't understand. I missed it.
Like, if you leave a country, like you did with your children, with your wife, what are the belongings you are taking with you? You're not taking 12 suitcases. You're just taking the important stuff. What is it? What you take when you have to leave your country in a situation like you were?
So what I done? I done the right thing. I only pick up my kids, and I left everything there. Like, I have a big office there, an international office there. It has been having a lot of other stuff, like houses, everything. The only thing that I was considering was my family, and I left it that, and I pick only my family. That is it. So I have nothing. Even today, I was trying to do some shopping for myself, and unfortunately, sorry, I should
open the door. Sorry. Don't open the door.
So sorry.
No
sorry,
problem.
Guys. If anyone listened to me, I'm so sorry. It was my kids.
I'm so happy to hear you, to be honest. I'm so happy to know now that you are in safety. That's a very soothing information I got from you. And it's very good to hear the bell ring, because that means everything is fine.
Thanks.
The question was, like, you only took your kids, you left everything behind, you don't have, like,
everything.
Okay.
Everything. So, to be honest, let me share another story that we was spent like 2 days at the airport the first time, and we got a break, so I can let me explain what happened from after the Sunday. So by the Saturday, we all went to the airport. I mean, I called my family. I had access to the airport, like my vehicles have access card. So we went to the airport. We spent all the night in the airport after things gone crazy. As I said, the guys were in with the guns in the plane. Then we spent all the night there. The flight not happened. So there was a hook. Qatar flight was coming to Kabul, and it was chartered by the company to take us out. That they didn't. They left without the passengers. They only took one of our colleagues. That's it. So they left the country because they afraid maybe people will jump on that plane too. We spent all the night there, and off at the midnight, there was lots of security guys. Then another news released in the airport, the Taliban is coming into the airport.
Mm-hmm.
All the soldiers left the guns on the ground, and they changed quickly clothes. They had Afghan clothes like normal people. They left the airport. The airport's gone crazy, and there was no one at the airport. Somehow, the people has been aware that there is no one in the airport. A group of them people came into the airport on the runway. Everyone was walking on the runways, on the planes.
That's the reason. So because the soldiers, they took off their clothes, they put their weapons on the ground, and everyone could enter the airport. And that's the reason why we saw worldwide those horrible pictures of people clinging to planes and falling from planes, because there was no security enemy.
That's right.
Because they were scared.
Yes, that's right. That was the start point. So that was the start point. So we went all the day. Then the special force came in. I mean, Afghan special force, they tried to take the control. They couldn't done it. And after that, the Marines came in to take the control. Kindly they controlled the people. They took out everyone. Well, I then smartly, I had been took all my team in a parking area and I locked the door behind us, and it was dark. No one was realized that we were there for the time. And so the Marines has been took the control of the airport. They make a line, they put the grills on it, they park all these tanks around so no one get access to the site until in the morning. So in the morning, most people has been heard. There is no one in the airport. The big crowd of the passengers came in. They had flights on the time, but there was no flight was happening. They gone crazy. They gone into the runway, airport, everywhere. Then the access, the control is gone out of control from Marines too.
Yeah.
Everyone was on the runway. Then they gone to crazy around the airport. They were seeing any plane that was jumping on it without pilot. So I have been witnessed the people were sitting on the plane for at least more than 12 hours or 13 hours to get out of the country. They was only thinking that this, the plane go out. No pilots came in to make the flight happen.
Yeah.
So, and after that, we were on the plan to leave the country. Then we has been contact Marines and we has been contact other peoples to get out of the country. They decide to take us away, but there was no chance because all the normal people was understanding that we are the one going leave Afghanistan legally because they were seeing us. We are with the kids, we have luggage, everything. So we make like a different plans, like more than 10 different plans, and we not get success. So the last plan that we made, so we discussed with each other, and I said, okay, there is only way that we should stay in the airport because we are safe. If we go to the out of the airport, we're getting searched. Because in the morning when my driver left the airport with my mom, they got a stop at the first checkpoint of the Taliban. They took out my car and they left my mom and my driver to walk away. And my vehicles stayed with them at the airport, and I have seen it last time when I left Kabul. It was on really bad mode. They break the windows, all things. I said, guys, if you leave the airport, they will search us. It's better we stay near. So we decide. Then the Marine said, okay, come closer to us. Make a surround of the group that we realize it's you guys. We'll take you guys. Then they decide to make scenarios. He said, okay, whenever we start shooting on the air and spreading these people, you guys should come to our side. So it has been done this for 3 times. We didn't get success. On the last time, we have seen the Taliban, which the Marine was only 15 minutes away from us. The Taliban came on the middle, start, you know, beating the people with the stick, with the heavy woods and pipes, everything, and shooting on the air. Not cares who is woman, who is what child, just been started beating everyone. Then the people gone away and I lost like my 2 luggage, which I had money on it, like all important documents on it, everything. And tomorrow of that day, a friend of me called me, said, "May you are, that's why we left the airport." And they called me, said, okay, that was a good chance to us actually to leave at the airport at that time because we left with a big crowd of people because it was tough to them to realize who was who, and we were lucky to left on them. But I lost 2 luggage, which was all my important things and documents.
And then you came back to the airport, and then you could catch the flight to.
We came home, and on the night while I was at home, my gate got knocked off by the Taliban. But I can't say they were behind me, but they only knocked the door. They said, whose house is this? Is the government house or something like that? But I have a lots of guests or IDP people from my relatives, some other people from Herat to my house. They said, no, it's a normal house. There is no one. That's it. And they left. So then I changed my place in the morning. I changed my location. I was waiting for the other flight. What have we done? Then we got access for the second day and we wait, and this morning I gone and I get in.
We are thinking about going to Afghanistan in November or December. Do you think it's a good idea?
Not a good idea, but we'll see the situation. If the situation going good, but maybe, but I don't think so that's going to go good.
Okay. What do you think? How long it will take that Afghanistan will settle with the new Taliban government?
So the one thing was really common between the people, everyone saying we gone back like 20 years. So in the past 20 years, since the United States came into Afghanistan, we made something. This means we lost all of them. And again, I hope that I be wrong. I hope that we are like standing on the place we are. If you're not going further, at least we should stay on the place that we got in the past 1 year.
Can you, do you think there is something, like there is a chance that something happens like in Syria, that there will be like a small group of people fighting against the Taliban, like, I don't know, there's a civil war, that there will be a civil war?
I hope not. I know what you're asking exactly, because we have been experiencing it in the past between the civilian wars, I mean Mujahideen and Taliban, and before that we have been experienced that. I hope we're not good that position. But what I'm thinking, we are close to that war. We are close to that war because right now I'm hearing this fight on the north, because we have no central government, but there's war. I don't know what they're fighting about. And I have seen, because yesterday was the flag day. And some people was left, you know, Afghanistan flag, but I was seeing they are getting harassed by the Taliban and getting beaten by the Taliban. Why you guys still respecting that flag, and why not respecting the white flag of Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, what they calling it. So this time when I'm saying these things, we are close to that war, but I hope that not go happen.
Do you like in Germany, when we are discussing about Afghanistan, the Taliban is always like, those are the bad guys. Is it that easy? Can you just say Taliban is bad and the rest is good? Like, it seems for me too easy to just say those are the bad guys and we have to fight them. I think there's more to it. What is your opinion on this?
It's really hardly to say about bad things about them or good things about them. It's really hardly, because we are seeing a big, you know, a changing on them. Because they, like you see before, it was not possible that women go work on TVs. Like now you see they done interviews with the women on the TVs, like live interviews. And I have seen, you know, many other changes. They are a little bit changed from the past, but it's not 100% clear they're staying on it or no. Because when people were asking on the from the spokesperson of the Taliban, they was keep telling, we have to make a Sharia law rules or something like that, like Islamic rules. So if they're looking for the smaller Islamic rules, again, it's different. But the Islamic rules that they was having it and the past regime they had, that's not acceptable from the people. So it's really hardly to say something about that. Let's hope that they are changed, and I hope they go make a government that is, you know, having all the part of Afghanistan with them, including the people they were in the government. So I hope that they not do the mistake that the United States done in 2001. So when the 2001 United States came to Afghanistan, they ignored Taliban totally. Even they didn't ask who were the Talibans. But that's why the Taliban has been seen, no one is attentioning, and no one has been giving them right. They went to the mountains, they have been recreating themselves. That's why we have this big, you know, net of them.
You said one thing to me which impressed me a lot when we met in Kabul. You said to me that when the Taliban was here, Kabul was safe, but now we are free. Do you think this will be the same? Like, Afghanistan will become safe again, but you are not free? Is this the future of Afghanistan, a safe country, but an enslaved country at the same time?
So to be honest, the past government, I know the President Ashraf Ghani's government had most freedoms, but there was a big, you know, problems there too, which we can say highly corruption and these type of things were really, you know, nice people around and not, you know, these things. But Taliban's right now were kindly, we feeling safe inside the city. I mean, I'm talking for the normal people, not like people like me. We have our, you know, stress about different things. But no one have the freedom. So if you go compare the safety and freedom, it's both are on the equal level. We must be have both of them. So if one is missing, this means there is no government and there is no place to stay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All good, Hilliard.
Okay, thank you. Have a nice... What are you doing? What are you doing tonight? What do you have for dinner? Or are you going to bed? Are you exhausted? I can't imagine how you feel now.
I'm a little bit okay now, but still I'm worrying about my family. I'm just working with the friends. About my family, how to take them out. So I have been working since morning, since I'm in working, so I need sleep, but still I need to think about them, because if I not have them again, I'm in problem.
How do you can manage to get them out? How do you do that? Is it are we talking about your mother and your father, or?
Yeah, my mom. I lost my father. God bless him. But I am looking for my mom, for my sister, and my brothers.
Okay, and how do you manage to get them out?
I'm in contact with different people, so like different government has been announced to help people, like has in Afghanistan work for them, like Germans, Australians, Canadians, and United States, and British people has been announced that they are helping the people that's been work for them, or journalist families. So I'm trying one of these options to take them out.
Are you satisfied with the international community of how they help Afghanistan people right now? Or do you think they failed too? Then it's not only the Americans they failed, also the
To be honest, all of them failed. All of them failed. And they are also realizing they failed. So the Mr. Biden or such of those type of people has been decided this make this program happen. They are not thinking this much, it's going this much worse. So this means they're all failed. And right now they are kindly trying to pay back or take the control. I think it's super late.
Thank you very much.
Okay.